Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We all leave traces when we move. You know, no crime is ever committed in a random location.
For the very first time, the greatest minds in criminology have come together to dissect the psyches of some of the world's most prolific serial killers. These forensic psychiatrists, psychologists, and pathologists have an incredible depth of knowledge and often first-hand insight into these killers, helping us to understand what makes a monster. The following interview with Dr. Sam Lundrigan was recorded in August 2019 for Crime and Investigations TV series Making a Monster. Dr. Lundrigan is an investigative psychologist and geographic profiler whose expertise lie in geographic profiling systems and the spatial behaviour of criminals. Working closely with the police to provide geographic profiles on a series of serious crime investigations, Dr. Lundrigan brings her knowledge to help us understand how a serial killer's geography may influence their crimes. Here, Dr. Lundrigan discusses Scottish serial killer and paedophile Robert Black. Caution: the subject matter of this interview contains graphic descriptions and is often very disturbing.
Geographic profiling is a technique that is used to help predict where an offender might have his or her base from an analysis of the distribution of the crimes. So what the technique does is help prioritise a search area based on an analysis of the distribution and the relationship of the crimes to each other, and it will prioritise the most likely area of residence or base, so the centre of gravity, if you like, where the sort of centre of the pattern is. And then what the police can use that for is to help prioritise door-to-door inquiries, for example, or searching databases for known offenders who might live within that particular area. And so it will never be used to exclude suspects, but it can help to narrow down the search for suspects. Robert Black is highly unusual in the way he utilised the whole of the United Kingdom to commit his offences. I've never seen a case since then, and certainly at the time when the geography was looked at compared to previous child killers, he was by far and away the most mobile, which immediately says something to me in terms of the geography, because what we have to remember is this isn't an offender who's just randomly combing the United Kingdom looking for victims. There has to be an underlying reason for why he committed the crimes in those locations. And this is where it gets interesting, because of course, we now know that his occupation gave him an entirely legitimate reason for travelling the length and breadth of the United Kingdom. It facilitated his offending. And so once you understand his non-offending behaviour, you can immediately start to make sense of why or how he used that to commit these crimes in seemingly scattered all over the country. This was one of the biggest manhunts, I think, since the Yorkshire Ripper, this case. The first thing is linking the crimes together. So individually, they would have presented challenges because the victims were abducted in one location and then in many respects found hundreds of miles away. Their bodies were found hundreds of miles away. So that is so atypical that investigators, where do you start? Because usually when a murder happens, the search is local, which the search would have been in all of these cases. But once the bodies are found 250, 300 miles away, then which of these locations is the most significant? How do you start to unpack? How do you start to understand the relationship between the two and work backwards to try and understand what's going on? I do think early on it came up that they thought he maybe have some sort of job as a delivery driver. That does seem like the obvious conclusion to come to. Yet, at the same time, how then do you, if there's no real connection with a place, then how do you start to identify a suspect pool, if you like? But of course, the important thing is you know, no crime is ever committed in a random location because an offender has to place himself there. So there is always a way of linking an offender to his environment. And if we now, in hindsight, look back at Robert Black's movement, we know he did those runs from London to Scotland regularly. We know that he deliberately used to say to his work colleagues that he would find, back routes off those locations or back routes through to the locations to deliver his goods. We know that he had a base in the Midlands within a 26-mile radius of where he disposed of three of the bodies of his victims. And that was a base. That wasn't a random choice. He was staying there on his routes from London to Scotland. So all of these decisions we can map back and understand the rationality underlying them. I think those early crimes were really pivotal for him in that he realised very early on that, yes, if he offended too close to home, then the chances of apprehension would increase significantly. And he also realised when that happened that actually that would blow any cover he had out of the water. So once he moved to London, away from his original home base in Scotland, I think he made a conscious decision to keep London and that area around his home as his sort of buffer zone, if you like, where he didn't offend, so he could maintain that rather thinly veiled air of respectability and keep his offending behaviour, his murders and his abductions, a safe distance from where he offended. And of course, for him, because his job was taking him from London to Scotland, he had the whole country to choose from. There's a huge risk to travel any distance with a victim inside an offender's vehicle. But the flip side of that is that with it sort of prolongs or elongates the pleasure, if you like. It's got that ultimate control for for as long as possible. And also some satisfaction in evading capture, driving all that distance, knowing full well what is in the back of his van. And Robert Black really enjoyed, I think, those sorts of challenges and getting away with it. He would seek out those very environments where he would be guaranteed to find young children playing, and he would use those environments to observe, to stalk, and ultimately, when the opportunity presented itself, i.e. there was one child left in the playground, no adults nearby, or at the side of the road, to abduct them. He selected deposition sites that were in lay-by, so he didn't have to drive too far off the main highway, where lots of lorries and vans stopped, so he would not have attracted any attention. And then he was very adept at taking his moment to move the bodies of his victims and, well, discard of them, really. There was no attempt even really to hide them. So he chose the closest locations he could to his legitimate activities to utilise for his illegitimate activities. He really had two bases. He had his London base, where behind his closed doors, and you know he was a tenant in with a family. He had his secret world of his fantasy fueled pornography and so on and child abuse imagery, which was readily available to him in London. But he didn't offend there. He kept that just as his sort of private fantasy driven world. But once he got in his van, which was his second base, and his van really was like a mobile home base, and he could take that once he was in his van and traveling wherever he traveled, he had a base with which he could actually enact out those fantasies, and that's what he did time and time again.
Convicted of the kidnap, rape, sexual assault and murder of four young girls between 1981 and 1986, Black died in prison in 2016. He is suspected of having committed many more crimes. His last attack, the kidnapping and sexual assault of a fifth girl in Stowe in the Scottish Borders, was prevented when a neighbour saw Black bundle a girl into his van. With the neighbour having noted the registration and called the police, Black drove back through the town and was arrested, with the kidnapped girl's father being one of the arresting police officers.
He made some fundamentally bad decisions that day when he got caught. And it was interesting because they were all rational. If you actually unpack them, the decision-making, first of all, he abducted the young girl in Stowe, and he thought there'd been no witnesses. He'd made that assumption, and he based his further decision-making on the assumption that he hadn't been seen. And he then made a really interesting decision that he couldn't carry on to his next delivery with the girl in the back immediately. So he made the decision to go in the opposite direction, which meant that when he turned around, he had to come back through the very village that he'd abducted her from. And of course, in the meantime, it had been reported there were police everywhere, and that was his downfall, because he drove right back into the heart, of the trap, really, of how he was caught. I think the most significant reason for why he was so difficult to catch for so long was because of the way he used his environment. It was his geography. It was the fact that he covered so many hundreds of miles across a country with many, many different police forces, that his crimes weren't linked for a long time, and he with distance came the safety for him. Ultimately, it also meant that when it finally did go to court, it was also the reason why it was easy to put him in those places at all those particular times and places, because of the records that were kept. But until that point, that distance afforded him the freedom to carry on offending for as long as he did. We all leave traces when we move, because if we're using a vehicle, we have to refuel. We will pass through police camera zones where number plates are recognised. So it's very, very difficult to travel undetected. So going back, you can, using all these different mechanisms these days with technology, you can trace people's movements really quite accurately. And even back then, in the time when Robert Black was offending, because he was using his legitimate career to carry out his crimes, he was having to fulfil certain processes as he went about his business, i.e. keeping record of his fuel receipts, using payment cards that were attached to his company. So actually, in many respects, he was leaving a calling card across the country as he drove around, which meant the case against him was reasonably easy to piece together. So over the years, I've worked predominantly within a university environment as an academic researcher, building the evidence base, understanding, trying to understand more and more about the decision-making of offenders in terms of their geography and where they commit crimes. Always with the idea that that can be applied back into the real world in terms of investigative techniques. So I've worked very closely with police forces in the States and Canada and New Zealand, as well as in the United Kingdom, assisting usually with stranger rape or stranger murder inquiries, where there's an unknown offender, a series of crimes, helping them to understand what that pattern of offending might mean from a spatial perspective, a geographical perspective, and how the environment, how an offender might be using his environment to offend, and what that might tell us, working backwards, about where he might live and the world he's operating in.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I've interviewed many offenders over many years, and one thing I've found time and time again, they often find it really hard to articulate why they've done something. What they have never failed to do is to tell me where they did it. They understand the underlying rationality of the where an offence takes place, and so it shows how revealing that can be. The location is the location. There's no ambiguity, and so if a series has been reliably linked together, then and I'm satisfied that we are dealing with one series of offences linked to one offender, then there is no erroneous information. Those locations become part of the analysis. It gets more challenging when you're looking at the behaviour within a crime, within the individual crime. So within any murder, there are X number of behaviours, and deciding which of those behaviours are the ones that are most useful in helping us pull together a picture of the offender is much more challenging, and there's all sorts of, and that's why we do so much research on solved cases, because what we're trying to understand is which actions or behaviours at a crime scene link reliably with characteristics of the offender himself. Because there's lots of behaviours at a crime scene that, frankly, are of no interest, in that they're not going to tell us anything about the offender, either because they're too common, or indeed that they're driven by something other than the offender himself. So they might be driven by the victim's behaviour. So we're looking for those behaviours that are coming from the offender himself, and therefore will tell us more about the way he operates, and whether he's committed crimes similar in the past, or where he might be in his offending career, how old he might be, and so on.
That's the final episode of Making a Monster, The Tapes. For a deeper understanding of how the serial killers featured in this series came to be, make sure you've watched Making a Monster, the TV show, which is available on demand. For your next true crime podcast fix, try Crime and Investigations Murder Town. Or we have some great interviews with some of the people that make our shows on Inside Crime and Investigation. And if you'd like to try something different, search for history podcasts, Not What You Thought You Knew, with Dr. Fern Riddell, or Letters of Love in World War II, both from TV channel History. Rate and review on your podcast app if you enjoyed listening, or share the series using hashtag Making a Monster. And finally, follow Crime and Investigation on social media and visit crimeandinvestigation.co.uk to stay up to date with all the latest news. Making a Monster, The Tapes features interviews recorded by Monster Films for the Crime and Investigation TV series and was voiced by me, Cherry Healy, produced by Sam Pearson and Chloe Frost, with editing by Joel Porter.
History's Letters of Love in World War II reveals a remarkable account of the Second World War through a series of real-life love letters.
Featuring interviews with their family and starring me, Johnny Pitts,
and me, Amy Nuttall. This 8-part podcast series tells the brave, tenacious and touching story of Cyril and Olga's war.
We found a place to park our tanks, climbed out, just going to start a fire to make a meal when, phew, bang, one shell dropped about 20 yards one side of the tank, another about the same the other side.
I'm dreaming of those 3 happy months we spent together at home. How quickly they flew. It'll be like a second honeymoon when we start that life again.
The locals came out in canoes to try and sell fruit, baskets, sandals, etc. How my mouth watered when I saw the piles of bananas, mangoes, oranges, pineapples. I haven't had any fresh fruit since I left home.
A sad note crept into your letter from Port of Call when you described the rough sea. And you said for a moment you thought you saw a glimpse of the Peakland Hills with limestone walls. You were gliding down towards Taddington on a misty April morning. Then suddenly it was the green sea with its white veins and the village was lost in the trough of a wave. It must have been a lovely little dream, and you described it so beautifully.
Download Letters of Love in World War II on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Acast.
The mind of a criminal can be a very dark place. But you're not scared of the dark, are you? Crime Con, the world's number one true crime event, is coming to London.
25th and 26th of September, 2021.
Get inside the mind of serial killers and psychopaths. Learn from leading criminologists. Hear from the families and survivors. Meet your favorite true crime podcasters. Immerse yourself in forensic evidence and delve deeper into unsolved crimes. Tickets are on sale now.
Visit crimecon.co.uk.
CrimeCon UK. The ultimate true crime weekend. Partnered by Crime and Investigation.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What makes a stalker tick? I'm Ruchira Sharma, inviting you to delve into Anatomy of a Stalker, an original crime and investigation podcast.
That police officer's partner drove to my house to warn me that this man would kill me.
She'd look in the rearview mirror, out from the back seat would up pop the ex-husband.
Don't miss Anatomy of a Stalker. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. The hunt begins now.